We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, welcome back to another BuzzBeat episode. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Richie, and I'll be joined by Brian and Spencer for a Substack mailbag episode. As always, you can check out our Substack, which is displayed here on the screen, by downloading the app or visiting buzzbeat.substack.com, and you guys can chat and submit questions that way. The Hornets did lose last night to the Sixers, but we're going to talk about some big picture stuff here on Playback. And I am joined by Spencer and BG. Spencer, how's it going?
Doing good. I guess it would be going a little bit better if Bubble Chaos didn't break out yesterday. I think the Hoos are going to be left out, but whatever. I don't have any disappointment really left in my body. So at this point, it's probably good if I just kick my feet up and watch the tournament.
That's always the best way when you don't really have a team in there and you just kind of sit back and relax and you're not having a rooting interest. Yeah, the stress goes away. But Brian, how about you? How's it going?
Doing pretty well. Interesting ACC tournament this year, to say the least. Very, very fun watching states run. Pretty amazing. 5 wins in 5 days is truly remarkable, especially considering some of those games were, I mean, they were trailing to Louisville in round one. They needed, basically a miracle and some potentially game management faux pas from UVA down the stretch to win that game. And then, I mean, they sort of like controlled the game against UNC, but given their injuries, I mean, they're basically got two or three guys dinged up, another guy out sick right now. I mean, they're essentially just playing 6.5 guys and to win 5 games in 5 days. Pretty amazing. So I'm doing well. I'm looking forward to Selection Sunday, seeing how some of these other conference tournaments shake out today in the SEC, and I guess the Big Ten as well, where we've got Illinois and Wisconsin. That's interesting. So, yeah, I'm doing well, and looking forward to talking some Hornets with y'all.
Very good. Before we get into this, two things I want to bring to our listeners' attention. Number one, we've got a giveaway going on for a free BuzzBeat shirt. There are not many participants in this giveaway, so your chances of winning go up dramatically if you just put your name in it. I will put the link to the actual rules in the episode notes. And then number one, as I've mentioned before, I like to read off some of our reviews, which we've gotten a couple of them since like our last episode. So the first one comes from Knox equals Bust, that username. He says, this podcast is a must listen for Hornets fans looking to break down the games in depth. Their hosts are incredibly knowledgeable and provide insightful analysis that truly enhances the listening experience. Highly recommend. And then there was another one coming on the 15th of March from the user R. McMulley. The boys at BuzzBeat provide the best X's and O's breakdowns of the Hornets out there. And between them, there's also really helpful and insightful, careful, big picture analysis that you won't find other places. Their salary cap and trade options work is almost always spot on. The draft analysis is excellent, which we will, I'm sure, get to soon. And when you combine that stuff with the occasional post-game reaction pod, BuzzBeat has it all. Keep it up. Good job, guys. All right. So let's go ahead and get into these questions. We will start with a question about Trey Mann, and I'm going to pull it up here on the BuzzBeat Substack chat. All right. Let's see here. From Michael, what is your updated assessment of Trey Mann in the Hornets context now that the sample size is starting to grow? What kind of bench role could you see him play on next year's squad? And where does he like rank up in relation to some of the other young bench guards? Brian, I'll let you start this one off. First off, Trey Mann is averaging 12 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds in those 15 or so games here in Charlotte. And good timing with this question because he actually had a pretty good game against the Sixers on Saturday where his driving kick game was working. You know, a couple of driving paths to the rim. He got into the passing lanes again defensively. But Brian, what is your overall assessment on Trey Mann and like where does he kind of stack up against the other guys?
You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill You Might Win Some, But You Just Lost One trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Yeah, I've enjoyed watching him. I've enjoyed all the, you know, all of the pieces that Charlotte picked up at the, you know, right before the deadline. I think a lot of those guys have played positive basketball. I think, you know, they're heading to an interesting offseason with Mann. You know, he'll be heading into the final year of his rookie deal next season. I think he's played very well. I think there's like very obvious talent with him on the basketball. Some of the, you know, shot creation and playmaking with those empty side pick and rolls that he's running, you know, gets with Grant or with Nick Richards, his movement off the ball, the spot up shooting in the corner. Richie, you've highlighted this a few times, but his just like aggression and timing and feel and passing lanes as a defender. Been very pleased and I would say like rather encouraged by how he's played this season for Charlotte. And he's a guy that I want around for them, you know, for at least a little bit longer. I want more of a runway to work with here. Obviously they're set up roster wise to have kind of an interesting, like the backcourt is a little interesting for next season in part because, you know, hopefully, you know, you're going to pencil in LaMelo as healthy. And if so, then obviously he's starting a point guard and playing a ton and, you know, offense is largely flowing through him, but like what happens with the other guard spot? You know, does Miller end up there or is he elsewhere along the wing more at the three? What developments does Nick Smith Jr. get into this offseason? And I don't think we've talked about the man LaMelo backcourt. I mean, I think it's something I'd like to see some of, but I don't imagine it as like a long-term starting backcourt. I don't think it's that for a few different reasons, both fit, defense, that type of stuff. But I think Mann is the guy that I don't think I would define him as like a microwave scorer, you know, sort of like the classic six man, you know, come in, you know, the Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford type. But to me, he can sort of be just like microwave offense because you can give him a second unit and just kind of like let him do his thing with the ball. Let him run a bunch of pick and rolls. And then in some games, you know, he's going to be able to close out for you. He'll be a spot starter. But to me, I think there's absolutely a role for him, next season. And maybe Nick Smith in the offseason and comes back and he's really ready for a larger role next season, in which case those guys are going to have to kind of compete. I think they could play together some of the second unit, but in terms of being sort of like the third guard, it would be interesting to see that competition. But I would long-term prioritize Nick Smith Jr. because he's younger, more years on his, you know, rookie contract. But I like Mann, and I think he's a guy that Charlotte should consider having around for the next, you know, few seasons maybe.
Yeah. His position is one thing that kind of, like, I wouldn't say drives me crazy, but I think his versatility helps and hurts in a lot of different ways, because the role moving forward, it kind of depends on like his pecking order. But he's got the versatility to play on the ball as a point guard, but also off ball as a secondary playmaker. And this season, and just in general, it seems like Clifford views him more as a off ball shooting guard type. He hasn't really played much as that primary guy. Like, if you look at Basketball Reference, like, it tells you that he has spent 100% of his minutes at point guard, but that's just not the case. But as an off-ball guy, kind of like to Brian's point, like, he's not necessarily a microwave scorer. I don't really view him as a guy that's like a catch-and-shoot guy. It's more of the ball gets swung around, he's relocating, which I actually think he does a good job of. And when he does get the ball on the weak side, he's still kind of prone and inclined to want to break down the defense with his ball handling moves. So regardless of what position you call this guy, he is his game is very similar depending on whether he's playing the point guard or the shooting guard. It really doesn't change a ton. And then defensively, you mentioned this about the pairing with LaMelo. I think he has like the intangibles. I think the compete level is fine. I've mentioned this before. I know that sounds like a broken record, but he's got good hands in the passing lanes. He's going to be around the loose balls. He's a good rebounder for his size. But I think physically, he's just going to be outmatched one-on-one. There are just going to be some matchups where he just doesn't really stand a chance, kind of, you know, disrupting the penetration. So that's why I think ultimately I don't know where he and LaMelo could play side by side, at least not for sustained minutes as a backcourt duo. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see where he falls within the pecking order of all the other guards. Like, if you're taking Brandon Miller out of the equation, because I kind of view him more as a wing slash forward, LaMelo's obviously the top guy when healthy. Like, do we view Cody Martin and Vasa Micic above Mann, or just Martin? Like, where does he fall there, do you think?
I would just say, I think I would have Martin above Micic in the pecking order. I think Micic has played quite well with Charlotte. I've really enjoyed his drives. He's crafty. He's strong. He's physical. You can see why he was such an accomplished player in Europe before he got over here. And I will say, watching he and Mann, Richie, I don't know how much of the Thunder you've seen this year, but like, they drive the ball, right? Like, they are relentless in how they pressure the rim and how they want to heat things up with their drives. It starts with Shea, but it's J-Dub. You know, it's a lot of other guys there too. And you can see how those guys like have that DNA in their game to drive the ball. And then you can also see why the Thunder were interested in Micic. Like, it totally makes sense. But I would prioritize. I just think that, like, I think Cody's got more versatility. He's a better defender. And he can, it's not like he's a total, like he can do stuff with the ball too. I mean, he can be a secondary guy. He can run, you know, empty side pick and roll. And he can catch and go. So I would say him. Like, I would prioritize him. But, you know, there is a bit of a, I wouldn't say log jam, but it does make it seem like at some point, you know, Charlotte's going to be able to, like, when they want to flip the switch, they're going to be able to execute some trades with some of the guys that they have in the guard room right now, because they're all on, like, you know, pretty favorable contracts.
Yeah, you know, regarding Mann, I think that he's very malleable, which is probably, you know, his greatest asset on this roster. I think he can play with really any other guard on the team, which is good. I mean, I largely agree with you guys. He's not like a microwave scorer type necessarily, but he has some of those tools in the toolbox, like his step back, just his ability to get his own shot kind of whenever he wants, is certainly a good thing to have as a guy that you need to come off the bench and score the basketball. I think he's fine as a facilitator. I don't love the idea of him being like the lead facilitator off the bench. You know, I really like the fit of him and Cody Martin playing together. Number one, I think Cody Martin is more naturally suited to kind of be set up the offense facilitator, is a little bit bigger, more of a passing, I would say natural passing feel. And then defensively, I think it's a good fit too, because I'm skeptical that Trey Mann's going to be able to guard much more than ones primarily moving forward in the NBA. You know, so Cody Martin, can slide up or even slide down a position. So I like that fit. But look, Trey Mann is he's going to be a guy in the NBA, I think, that eventually settles in to a bench kind of role. And I think Charlotte's a really good place for him to establish that and get a second contract. And I think the Hornets, the likelihood of them getting a pretty fair deal is I think there's a high probability for that. So I do like the fit long term with Mann and Charlotte. Richie, I think when my computer was freaking out there, you were asking, you know, do we prioritize like a Cody Martin and maybe a Mišić over a guy like Mann? I would just say that like they're all very different players, which I think is a good thing. And that they all have very different strengths and can play together. It probably raises more the question, is Steve Clifford the right one to figure this frankly deep guard rotation going into next season, assuming health? Is he the right guy to figure all that out and put the right places together? I don't know the answer to that, but I think Mann's going to be fine because he's a malleable player, and I think he's definitely a value add to this roster.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Yeah, I think my assessment so far of him is like he's done pretty well here in Charlotte, and for the most part, he's been pretty steady. He doesn't have many games where he goes crazy, but he doesn't have many games where he's completely non-existent. And I think for his size and stature, he does a good job of like staying physical on both ends of the court. Offensively, he's not afraid of contact driving to the rim. And I think, you know, where I would rank him among the guards for next year, like I said, kind of taking out Brandon Miller, Him and Mišić, are probably like 3-4, but like LaMelo and Martin, probably 1-2. And then Nick Smith Jr., I know you guys are higher on him probably than I am. I think I might actually put him below Mann, but I guess to Brian's point, Nick Smith Jr. is just younger and you have a little bit more runway with him and to develop him. So I think right now, though, I would put Mann above Nick Smith Jr. And then Bryce McGowan's, to me, he's probably more of a wing slash forward too as well, but like he's kind of like on the bottom of this list that was suggested from our Substack from Michael. So I don't know where you guys view McGowan's in relation to Trey Mann, but not that I'm losing hope on him, but he just seems so far down the pecking order.
We talked about McGowan's a couple of weeks ago, I think, Richie, if I'm remembering correctly. And I do like Bryce. I think he's been sort of like more pushed into like a catch and shoot, go, you know, spot up role. And I think he's like done okay with that. Part of the pitch with him out of Nebraska, though, was, you know, 6'7" guy that could also, run pick and roll. Haven't seen a ton of that this season. And it's just tough because from like a playmaking upside perspective, he hasn't shown as much as even a guy like Nick Smith Jr., you know, who has had his ups and downs and limited minutes as a rookie, but I think has also, you know, played quite well, you know, in flashes and really shown some good stuff for Charlotte. Spencer touched on this and it's worth mentioning because all the guys are different, but they can all like, you know, all of them can kind of handle a little bit and play off the ball. Having a guy like Mann that has that, like his defining thing is obviously like the space creation and his ability to get so low, like, keep an eye, like watch his legs and his shins, just like how he's got like Kemba, like sort of like quick flexibility in terms of like how he's able to, you know, pull back on crossovers and that type of stuff. You kind of want to keep guys like that around who can do that. Because like that's even in the NBA where you've got a ton of guys that could, you know, that can, you know, get their own shot. It's still pretty special and it's, you know, probably something you want to try to bet on and see if you can, because like if you can get the other stuff to work, then you've got another like, you have an outlier type characteristic in terms of like shot creation, maybe not outlier, but you've got like a really impressive skill in terms of the ability to like create space one-on-one. In Man's numbers, like in Charlotte, you know, it's not a large sample. He hasn't been here all that long. He missed some time with an injury, but 1.28 points per possession on spot ups. He shot the three really well off the catch in Charlotte. And when he runs pick and roll, the Hornets have scored, this is including passes, but 0.96 points per possession, which is not too bad. And he shot the ball, you know, decently out of the pick and roll, at least like from twos. And he shot the ball 64% at the rim. So I think overall, like he's shown you some pretty nice flashes in a relatively limited sample. And I do kind of like the Martin and Man, you know, backcourt pairing as well. I think that would be kind of not a bad place to start from if that's your sort of like, you know, backup, you know, guards next season. There's some interest there. And like as crowded as the guard room is for the Hornets right now, like, you know, this is a team that's going to probably end up with a top five pick. And, you know, they could look guard again. Like, they're like, I there are some guys that are interesting for them that are going to be in that draft range. And, you know, they might add another guy like that to the mix. If it's Rob Dillingham, Reed Shepard, Jacoby Walter, like those guys. I mean, Stephen Castle, I should say, from UConn, who I really like and actually think would be kind of a cool fit, even if top five is maybe like a little rich for him. But just like there's some interesting guys they could add, which would crowd things even more. And certainly that would make things tough for guys like McGowan's that are already sort of like pushed to the fringes here.
Yeah, quickly on Man, you know, I think that the fact that Charlotte traded, you know, for him and Mišić is probably a good indication of where they feel like their backcourt development is with guys like Nick Smith. And you know, Nick's obviously very, very young and is under contract until 26, 27. So there's no real rush with his development right this moment. McGowan's is the one that, you know, I do worry and start to speculate that it's trending towards him being the guy that gets squeezed on this roster. But you know, we'll wait and see. And I would anticipate that because his clock is ticking a lot faster, that we're going to see him play more to end this season, because the Hornets are going to have to make a decision on McGowan sooner rather than later. And it's, you know, you just get enough veterans and quite frankly, better talent in that kind of in that positional pool, and somebody has to be squeezed. So right now it looks like McGowan's. But look, I mean, the Trey Mann trade is looking better and better by the day. Like, we have enough of a sample now where it's pretty obvious. Like, this is a guy with some real NBA utility that was just laying to waste in Oklahoma City. And so good on Charlotte for being creative and thinking, how can we get players that can make our rotation deeper and make us a better, frankly, just a better roster right now versus the, let's just go get a bunch of future draft picks, which they did some of that too, right? But like a creative piece of work here to go get Mišić and Man, who are very obviously helping the Hornets from a competitive standpoint right now. And I think will next year.
And it like should just, you know, last thing, let's just like, we've talked for years about the issues with backup point guard, backup guard, backup, you know, offensive initiator in Charlotte. And like, look, I hope next season LaMelo plays 75 games, 70 games, like whatever it is. And I'm sure a guy like him might be, if healthy, motivated to play those 65 plus games, as you're seeing some guys try to like bite down and hit that benchmark this year so they can, I guess, qualify for some of these all NBA things. But if LaMelo were to miss 10, 20 games, you know, miss a couple of weeks or here or there, like, I would feel pretty confident about having a guy like Man, whether he like starts or not, but just his ability to come in and basically all of a sudden you can feel comfortable giving that guy, you know, a couple dozen pick and roll possessions to initiate per game. that to me, that seems like a good thing to have on the roster. So just one more sort of piece to add to, Mann's candidacy to kind of be a guy to stick around in Charlotte for some time.
He also came from a great college program, too. So
He did. He used that second year of eligibility or at his sophomore season at Florida. And man, he took off after that.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool that his freshman year they had he and Andrew Nembhard on the same roster.
Yes.
Two guys that have are going to turn in. Looks like they're going to both turn into being pretty good NBA players.
Do people view Nembhard as a Gonzaga guy or a Gator guy? Like when you just think of him initially, do you think Gonzaga?
Probably. I think most people would think Gonzaga, but I think for me it's hard to separate. I watched him at Florida a lot, so. I think both. But my guess would be people go with what they saw last. And those Gonzaga teams he was on were also very good. So, people watch them play a lot too.
All right. The final question here in the Substack chat is from our longtime listener, Keith. I have it displayed on the screen. I also have a poll here in playback. So if you guys want to vote on it, you can actually vote on it after the fact and just kind of join our room. If you were Jeff Peterson, what would be your top priority this offseason? And Keith lists four different things. And I actually ranked them this morning. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to kind of look at this and debate between these four. So Keith says, I can't decide between number one, finding the right coach, addressing the roster, accumulating draft assets, or turning over the front office. Which one would be top priority? Which one would be the final priority? I think all of these are pretty close. They're pretty neck and neck. I think you can make an argument for anything being the top priority. So I don't know how we want to do this. Do we just want to talk about each of these individually? Do we want to give our rankings? Brian, do you have any preference on how we kind of address this question?
No real preference. I think it might be good to, we could go through each one.
Okay.
And then maybe sort of also, from there, give our sort of rankings and,
okay.
but all obviously this comes with the obvious caveat of they're rebuilding right now. And so all of this stuff is super important. And I actually even think there's something you could even add to the list, though. I do think it probably falls underneath addressing roster too.
Okay.
But I think there's some stuff to consider there.
Okay. Well, Keith lists finding the right coach first. It's not necessarily my top priority, but it's up there. So I've said this in the past, but I don't think Clifford is or was the biggest issue here on the organizational priority list. The roster was just poorly constructed. They've made some trades, obviously, at the deadline, and the team has played better, albeit the record still what it is. But I do think if you can find the right coach this offseason, you go ahead and make that change. I haven't really done a ton of research into potential coaches that are out there. And the one thing that I keep debating on is I'm not sure if the Hornets would be better off going after an established guy with more experience, a guy that's been in the league. Now, obviously, if you go after a guy like that, he may not be one that's willing to adjust. He may not be a guy that's willing to try new things. He's kind of stuck in his ways at that point, but at least he's a known commodity. Or do you go for a young, energetic guy? Maybe a guy like Charles Lee, who is currently with the Boston Celtics. He was with the Bucks before, and actually he has ties to Rick Schnall back in Atlanta for several years when he was assistant there. So that's the one thing I don't know. I don't have a good grasp on where the Hornets should go if they were to find the right head coach. So those are my thoughts. It's not my top priority, but I do think it's something that obviously the Hornets will look into.
Yeah, I think I think Cliff's done okay with being dealt a pretty tough hand.
Right.
I think the connections with he and Jeff Peterson are a little interesting. But if Charlotte is going to make a change of coach this offseason, and if it got to the point too where they were we're going to bring Cliff back, we want one more season, especially because they're not winning next year, whatever. If they want to give Cliff one more year, I wouldn't vote for that, but I wouldn't be totally up in arms. I do think if you're going to go the reset route, it does make sense to get someone in here that is sort of with you from the jump as you're sort of building, as you're sort of laying the foundation. So Jamal Mosley in Orlando, Mark Dagnall in Oklahoma City. I mean, these are best case scenarios. Those guys are awesome coaches. And yes, obviously, if you could just like push button, get one of those guys, and along with all of the high draft picks they get to coach, you would obviously do that. But I think those guys have both done a very nice job in their respective franchises. Charles Lee is an awesome name. I think people that are coming out of the Celtics organization are ones you've got to, I think, really consider, just given like how successful, not just how successful, but how like creative that franchise has been. And I should also say, you guys, Charles Lee was, this is a long time ago, when I was a little kid, when Charles Lee was playing at Bucknell, he came down and was a counselor at Wake Forest basketball camp. And he was my coach at Wake Forest basketball camp many, many summers ago when he was a very good college player at Bucknell. So I'm excited for him to get a head coaching job in the NBA, which is going to happen sooner rather than later, whether it's in Charlotte or not. So
do you think he'll thank you for being such a good basketball player as a counselor?
Yeah. Well, it was cool. Cause like he and Chris Paul and Justin Gray, who's the head coach at Coastal Carolina now, very young head coach at Coastal Carolina, just got hired there. Those guys would have like late night shooting sessions because they were all counselors at the camp. So when stuff was done, they'd go back into the gym and play hoops. So yeah, I don't know. It's gonna be cool to see him when he gets an actual gig. So my vote would be for like younger coach.
Okay.
And sort of like start laying with a thoughtful mind about either offense or defense, and then yeah, get that guy in here. Get that relationship started with LaMelo, with Brandon Miller, with Mark Williams, that type of stuff, and then go from there.
Yeah, I the coaching situation is very, very interesting. You guys have mentioned the Clifford's ties with Peterson going back to the Brooklyn days, and I really don't have a good feel for what's going to happen here. I definitely think Clifford is being evaluated like the rest of the roster right now. It really boils down to how aggressive Peterson wants to be on the reset, not of the roster, but really of, I guess, the culture, for the lack of better terms here. And I don't know that he's going to do that this summer. They might give Clifford one more year just for not having a good feel if he's not the right guy to do this. I mean, you can always go the cheaper route and hire an offensive coordinator, for the lack of better terms, right? And let Clifford kind of drive the ship, but delegate more responsibility to some younger, more creative, maybe philosophies, especially when it comes to the offensive end. So I don't know if that's priority number one. To me, it's really not. I think priority number one is still filling out this roster. This is not a full reset. Like, this is a team that, with health next year, LaMelo taking a step, Brandon Miller taking a step second year, like, it's not inconceivable this team could win around 40 games. So, this is not a full reset. I do expect it appears as if the Hornets will operate as a team above the cap. So, will they use their full mid-level exception? I think they need a wing, and I think they need more depth on the front court. There's no real way to evaluate whether Mark Williams can even come close to playing like 50, 60 games next year. And Nick Richards has obviously carried a really heavy load since Williams has been out, with little depth behind that. So, addressing that's going to be really important. And then again, just like a veteran physical wing, almost in like the 3-and-D archetype, I would say, to lift this defense a little bit. Funny enough, and we've already talked about it, I'm not sure really the Hornets do anything in free agency in the backcourt. I mean, they're just deep there. Like, I don't really know, health is an issue, obviously, but I don't know how else to say it. I think that would be kind of a waste of assets. So yeah, that's kind of what I expect. And I do think that getting this roster in a healthy place where you actually can have like 10 to 11 healthy NBA caliber players available night to night is important, because the back end of this roster, as we're well aware, has kind of been a joke this season. And I think that, obviously that was a Mitch Kupchak led front office, but like, we can't just turn our nose up at adding, spending a little money and adding some depth. To me, that's the most important thing this offseason, because I don't think this roster is that far away from competing.
Yeah, agreed. And I just want to, I mean, like, I mean, I guess Seth Curry could be around next season too. Like, that's another guard we haven't really named yet.
Forgot about him.
You know, so there is a lot. I guess I should say I'm upgrading them to logjam in the backcourt here. But I do love the thought of them looking like veteran, you know, like rotation wing. I think that would be probably not a bad thing. And you know, I do think a lot of this is going to end up coming down to come down to what they end up doing with Miles or what.
Yeah, exactly. It's exactly what I was about to say. I mean, maybe that was kind of your fifth thing earlier, BG. But I think depending on exactly what they do with that situation can really change the course of this roster quickly. My feel is that they're going to bring Miles back. I mean, you know, he's obviously played well this season. He has been, I think, a better defensive player, which is kind of what I'm always looking for with Miles, playing with a little bit more consistent energy. We know what he can do on the offensive end. But look, Peterson's still new on the job, and Miles is auditioning too. But yeah, obviously, if the Hornets were to sign and trade Miles Bridges, Richie, you did a nice job on the base year compensation thing that you put out on Twitter last week, or I guess in the last podcast, you know, explaining how that complicates, you know, business for Charlotte. But that would open up quite a bit of cap resource if the Hornets did decide to move off of Miles, and they could turn Miles Bridges, one guy, into two, maybe even three veteran wings. And I'm not sure that that's not the better thing to do. But there's obviously a lot of moving parts in the Miles Bridges conversation.
Yeah, he's the only guy on this roster that's like status is kind of still up in the air, because I feel like they got a good core of players moving into next season. And he's like really the only guy that's played significant minutes that's going to be a free agent. Seth Curry, like Brian mentioned, he has a non-guaranteed, but he could be in that logjam of guards. I think the biggest thing with this roster, we just haven't seen it fully healthy with LaMelo and Mark Williams. I think the Hornets could still obviously make some signings, some trades and stuff like that, but it would be interesting just to see this roster, this updated roster after the trade deadline with LaMelo healthy, with Mark Williams healthy, and how that plays out. So if the Hornets entered next season with not many, you know, significant changes, I don't think it would be the end of the world. But, you know, addressing the current roster and filling some needs and filling those veteran roles, I think is just as important. That's kind of what I have on addressing the roster. I think it's necessary. I know that's your top priority, Spencer, but it's actually kind of in the middle for me. What about draft assets? Where do you guys think that falls within the overall scheme?
Two things I wanted to add very quickly to addressing the roster. One, if Grant Williams ends up becoming like a bench guy for Charlotte next season, which could depend on, again, sort of like what they decide to do with Miles. You know, I am curious to sort of see how like the backup center minutes go. This is something we've kicked the can on a few different times. Like, I personally like it more as sort of like maybe, you know, something you do for a couple of minutes per game, not where like he's Grant Williams is just going to get, you know, put in pen as like the backup center in this case. But I do think it's interesting if you have Grant in a reserve role. You know, he'll still probably be splitting his time at 4-5, but if he's splitting his time at 4-5, and if Mark Williams is healthy and able to play, like Richards is going to be on the roster. I just could see his role. If Williams is healthy next season and playing well, I could see Richards having a like pretty like reduced role. If this is sort of depending on Grant also like being a bench, you know, like a key guy off the bench and playing some minutes at the five too. I could just sort of see that eating into stuff for Richards. So like, that's something I'm keeping an eye on, but that's contingent upon a few other things. It does also bring me to the thing I wanted to bring up as well, which is just like, in terms of addressing the roster, like I think honestly, my top priority this offseason, or one of them, would be making sure that Mark Williams and LaMelo Ball are like healthy and ready to go for training camp next year. Like whatever that takes, it just, you gotta have those guys in place, gotta have those guys ready to go. And for me, that's just something that it has to happen. Like you can't have another You don't want to have another lost year for those guys. So my thought would be that is for me, like I'm just doing whatever I can to make sure that like those guys have a good off season. They get healthy, they continue to develop, they build chemistry with guys like Miller, like any of that stuff. So that like come September, October this year, later this year, those dudes are just ready, you know, 6-7 months from now, they'll hit the ground running.
Yeah. And it, you know, there's been some noise about, you know, the Hornets medical staff. And so you do wonder if that's under the microscope right now and Peterson's considering, you know, a potential change there, at least a second opinion, because the Hornets, to Brian's point, you know, possibly the two, certainly two of the most three important young future pieces on their roster are dealing with injuries that we don't know a lot about, especially Mark Williams. So I think reaching out for a second opinion on how you get this guy healthy sooner rather than later and what the long-term therapeutic options look like for him, I think would be worth Jeff's while, and I'd be surprised if he's not doing exactly that. It's a good point.
All right, the third thing that Keith kind of brings up is accumulating draft assets. And I'm not saying that this isn't a priority because of where the Hornets are and their stage, their developmental stage. But if the team didn't acquire a future pick this offseason, I don't think I'd be too upset. They've already achieved that with the Rozier trade to Miami and the Mavericks trade as well. The Hornets just need to be smart with the way that they handle their current picks. Like, I'm not saying go out and start trading them for players, but of the four choices here, like on this checklist, this to me would be the lowest on my priority list of the four. But I also think these four are kind of like neck and neck. So this is not the one that I would like look at first.
They've got some stuff that they can move if they wanted to like add more picks. Like we just talked about a lot of these young guards that are on, you know, I think very tradable contracts. And like, I get, you know, maybe you could move them around and pick up some spare change in terms of draft assets. They certainly like were able to accomplish some of that at the deadline this year, which is huge to pick up, you know, two future firsts. So, you know, what you continue to add from here is just gravy. You just add more stuff to the pile. As of right now, Charlotte is set to, you know, have its own first round pick this year, and then to have Houston's second round pick. Their 2024 second round pick is out the door to either Portland or Denver, I believe. And so one of my thoughts would also be too, and this is why for me it would be very important to not sort of try to like fast track like a playoff team or something like that this offseason, if that was even possible, would be because like the pick that is still owed out to San Antonio, it's lottery protected next year. So just like from like an asset, from like a managing draft asset standpoint, like I would want to make sure that like I'm keeping that pick. So I think that's already part of like, I don't think Charlotte was, you know, is set up to be able to like turn into a playoff team next year. So it's not too big of a concern, but just like making sure to like continue the slow build and making sure you hold on to that pick as well would be a big deal. I think the draft is like the most important thing for them, but from like a draft asset standpoint, I think they're in like decent position. And if they can add more, obviously that's great. But I think the main thing is making sure to like keep that 2025 first and then just like nail these picks too, because you're going to have a top five pick this year and hopefully you have another lottery pick next year. And then you sort of like really start to maybe build it up. Maybe I'm being like a little too patient there and maybe they're going to want to speed it up. But from my standpoint, I think that's sort of like how I would be, because I want to control all of my first round picks. And so I don't want San Antonio and Victor Wembanyama to get that pick. So I would be trying to, and it's going to turn into 2 seconds or whatever, but I'd still rather have the one, obviously.
Yeah, I agree. I don't really think there is a whole lot more they can do from a, you know, trade standpoint to acquire more picks at this point. I think that work has been done. I mean, to be honest with you, like in terms of moving off a guard, I would say Nick Smith Jr., you know, assuming they're not trading Trey Mann, Nick Smith Jr. has probably got the most value just because he's got multiple years left on his rookie deal. But I'm not sure you're getting anything of real value there back. So, but yeah, Brian makes a great point. Like 2025 draft, you know, keeping that pick in a draft that I'm assuming is going to be better than this one. Everyone hates this draft. So,
it's definitely like, I mean, even just having a guy like Cooper Flagg atop it is going to raise the ceiling of it. In Ace Bailey. Yeah. So next year's draft does project to be, but there's a lot of good players in this one too. So it's like, you don't want to undersell this one too much. But yeah, I think 2025, there should be a premium put on that from like a draft evaluation standpoint.
Yeah. And I don't think that there's no debating that, yes, the draft is obviously Charlotte's quickest path to contention and making turning this roster into, you know, something of validity in the league. So it's a great point.
All right. The final item that Keith lists here is filling out or turning over the front office. Now, I actually think of the four, this is the one that I have the most confidence will actually just kind of get done naturally. Like we've already seen some of those initial moves happening, filling out the front office. That Akinwale guy was hired as the assistant general manager. He was with the Magic organization and eventually crossed path with Jeff Peterson in Atlanta for a handful of years as the director of player personnel. I will say that this is probably my top priority, but I also think it just naturally happens. This stuff will just kind of come with time, and there's no reason to think that these new owners will stifle any kind of movement that Peterson wants to make, and it will be filled out the way that he wants it. And I'm also considering, I guess this falls under this category, is the training staff. Does that fall under the front office and things of that nature? And if so, that also kind of bolsters my argument that this kind of needs to be the top priority, because I don't think that can get overlooked. And it has been mentioned on several occasions that the Hornets may be looking to kind of adjust their training staff. Whether or not it's fair criticism or not for these guys getting injured to kind of place it on the training staff, it just seems like there's some kind of trend that's going on here in Charlotte. So I will go ahead and kind of quickly give my rankings of the priorities. Number one is filling out the front office / training staff. Number two is finding the right coach. Number three is addressing the roster. And then number four is accumulating draft assets. So that's kind of how I view these rankings posed by Keith here.
Yeah, I would just flip, you know, the addressing the roster from where you had it, I think, third, Richie.
Okay.
You know, I think the coaching situation is probably the most important. I mean, that's just a true culture set decision, right? So I think that's the most important. And then I think just addressing the back end of this roster with more veterans, I think is pretty key moving forward for the next few seasons and just adding depth. I mean, that's really it. It doesn't even have to necessarily be veterans, quote unquote. But guys that, you know, have been in the league, have proven themselves, and we can know, regardless of injury, that we're not playing, you know, we're not moving guys to the G League and bringing them back and suiting them up 24 hours later to get nine healthy guys in the rotation. Like that, like we got to be a little bit more up to speed and up to age from that standpoint with the roster. So, but I agree with the rest of your rankings, Richie. I mean, the coach thing is just the most interesting to me. It really is. I'm torn on it. I need to like think about it more. Part of me really does believe that Cliff could steer this ship and make some creative changes around the margins with this coaching staff. And the other part of me thinks you just got to completely move in a different direction. It's a really tough decision for Jeff Peterson, I will say.
Yeah, it's I'm in the same place as you, Spencer. Like I feel torn similarly between like the directions they could go in terms of coach. You almost wish like they could sort of like hedge things a little bit, almost how they're doing like with you know Mitch Kupchak staying on in this like advisor role or whatever. You know, Cliff is a guy that's like great to have around your franchise. He's a junkie, he knows hoops. I think he could also be like a good culture setter. I think we've seen him do that at two franchises now, Charlotte initially and then Orlando. But those are sort of like different rosters and different spaces. So it's not apples to apples. especially compared to with where Charlotte's going to be to start next season too. So I'm there, and I think I have a similar sort of like order too, where I'd go coach, roster, draft assets, and then front office, stating what was pointed out by, I think, all of us during this, that just like, for me, having the draft third is just talking about, it's just specific to this question with like adding draft assets. Like, to me, that's almost like the as opposed to like adding more draft capital, it's really just like nailing what you have and nailing down the picks that you have too. Like that. So like that is very, very important to me. And I would probably prioritize just like the draft as a whole, you know, maybe a little bit further up these rankings. But if we're just talking about adding more picks or whatever, it sort of like falls further down for me.
I would add one more thing about Clifford. You know, I mean, he's 62 years old now. Like he has a history of some health battles. Like what does Steve Clifford want, you know, moving forward for the next 3 or 4 years? I wonder if it's possible, depending on what the answer to that question I just presented is, you know, can we have a similar situation with what the Hornets did with Mitch Kupchak? Like they didn't like fire him and drive him to the airport and send him on his way. Like he's still part of the organization. We don't know to what extent, but he still has an advisory role. I would, you know, if Jeff Peterson comes to the conclusion that we need to move in a different direction for our head coach other than Steve Clifford, you know, can he still be a part of the organization long-term moving forward in some kind of advisory role? I would, if they come to the conclusion that he's not the head coach, I would hope that would maybe be on the table.
All right, before we get out of here, Regulator has requested to join the stage. Regulator, what are your thoughts, questions? Go ahead.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Perfect. I just want to say thank you for all the content you're producing. I'm a content junkie when it comes to the Hornets. And I look forward, I'm sorry, I missed your first
playback
version of this, the playback. I help with another Hornets playback channel that goes on. And I wasn't sure if you would accept me after the warning I gave you. We had somebody flash us on playback, my fault, someone we didn't recognize, but I appreciate you guys doing it. Coach Clifford, the last time he was here, when he was leaving the team, he said the players quit playing for each other. And to me, that comment was more like the players quit playing for me, because he's part of that each other. So it'll be interesting to see how Clifford does his end of the season stuff to determine whether we're going to keep him or not. Because I think that was a big part of what he was doing, because with Dwight Howard that season, the team did quit playing for each other and for him. And I don't see that now. They seem to really be playing for him. So if Coach Cliff comes back, I'm not disappointed, but he is under contract. You know, he is under contract for next year, the team option. So I do think he'll be back. And if he's not, I'm fine. But if he is, we'll get to see some after game interviews that are worth seeing.
Yeah, he's always good for a soundbite or two every five games or so. Now, do you think he'll be back because, as you said in the chat, he earned it, or do you think he'll be back more because of the connection to Peterson?
I think that he'll be back because the players want him back.
Okay.
This is a players' league. You know, now granted, there's not a Kevin Durant on our team that says bring in Steve Nash, but you know, NSJ made the comment, this is the best coach I've ever played for. Now, he had one college coach and AAU coaches, so it's not a high bar. I understand that. But Miller has got some dog in him, and I think he appreciates Clifford the same way DSJ did last year. So I think it's going to come down to the players determining that. So keep an eye on the content of what the players say about Coach Cliff. Now, Miles is not going to say anything because he wants the money. But these guys that are under contract, like LaMelo and the rookies and Miller and even Mark Williams to a certain extent, they're going to determine the next coach more than Peterson is, in my opinion.
It's a good point. Yeah, if the players rally around their coach, that they have a good personal relationship with Coach Clifford, I think that will go a long way. And it could be one of those things where they give him one more year. To Spencer's point, he's getting up there in age. Also, too, like if there is a coach available that can kind of start this thing brand new this offseason and kind of get him in a year earlier, I do think the Hornets have to consider that as well. But all of these questions submitted, we wanted to thank everyone for joining us. We wanted to thank Regulator for joining the stage. Thank you so much for everyone today on Playback, or if you want to go watch it later, I'll put the link in the episode notes. For Spencer, for Brian, for our guest Regulator, I'm Richie. We will talk to you guys next time. Go Hornets.